Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Well, I have the great fortune to be sitting in the woods on a lake, Lake Coeur d'Alene in Idaho, with this in meeting with this wonderful group of masters and second degree students. And I have taken this opportunity to snag a few people to interview them for the program. And so if you hear funny noises, it just means that there's water running through the pipes or who knows what will happen. Wind blowing through the trees and so on. As you know, this month's theme is about teaching in countries. And, you know, Reiki masters, as far as I'm concerned, from the beginning, have done one of two things. They've either been called to travel and to teach, which is most of the people that I know who were Reiki masters in the 1980s, or they've set down roots and actually taught 90% in one place. And those are very far few between. One of the things that is really wonderful about being in one place, of course, is that you create your own home community and your students spread out from your own home territory. And there's a wonderful feeling of being in community and that community being congruent with you. As we travel, as the Reiki masters travel, there's a whole nother energy that comes through, which is that each culture that you teach in gives you certain challenges, and often those challenges can be gifts. And you always learn something, no matter what. And today I have with me Chelsea Van Connett, and she's from Kaslo, British Columbia. She lives way at the end, almost at the end of the road, as far as I'm concerned, and in a gorgeous, well, that's actually an understatement, part of the world, and is a place that is called the Kootenays in British Columbia. And this area has its own little subculture that I really love and feel very much at home with. And she's also traveled to Brazil and, of course, has taught in the United States. So Chelsea's coming to us with a very wide range of teaching experience. So Chelsea, please welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. And if you could just tell us a little bit about your Reiki path and how you met Reiki and so on, and then how you got to go to South America. Like, how did that happen?
Well, I started living in Canada in the 1970s after growing up in the States. And in 1979, heard about Reiki and this, quote, little old Japanese lady that was coming to the area to teach. And the next year was my time for coming into Reiki, and that's when I learned first degree with Wanyu Tuan, and then was heard again about this woman who then I knew was in the lineage of Reiki masters, Hawaii Takata, that she was coming to our area in October of 1980 to teach. And a friend said to me, if you ever thought you might want to learn second degree, this is a good time to do it. And so I learned my second degree at that point, also met you, Phyllis,
right,
in 1980, just before Mrs. Takata came, and had no idea at that point what this would grow into. I welcomed Reiki into my life for myself and my family and friends, and that's certainly how I used it in the beginning. And then eventually, part of my story with Reiki that grew my practice into going to other places was because of working more closely with you for a few years as your assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you had begun going to Europe. And so I sometimes traveled to Europe with you, but also in your home was able to help you host a lot of European masters that came.
Right.
And this was, for me, just a great opportunity because I have always loved and treasured the opportunity to meet people from other cultures and to learn different languages. So that just, it was so enriching to my life to have that opportunity. I've always been grateful for that. And so I was initiated as a master when we lived in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Right.
And started teaching in the States, and then also would go back up to our home in Canada and teach there, and traveled with you to Europe and taught some classes there and helped to facilitate some other workshops there for Reiki Master candidates and things like that. And then at one point when I was living in California, someone came and said to me, there's this woman who's from Argentina named Sharmada who would like to meet you and talk about taking Reiki to Argentina. Well, I had always felt very drawn to South America. I traveled in Central America and totally loved the people that I met there, the culture, the language, and always felt drawn to South America, but had never had the opportunity to go. So when I started getting to know Sharmada, we agreed that I would go there with her, and she'd organize Reiki classes there. And then she would, and that would be part of her training to be initiated as a Reiki master. So that was my first step into sharing Reiki in South America.
Oh, I didn't realize that you met her
in California.
In California. Oh, fascinating. Yeah. Gosh. I must have skipped that part. So how was it to go down to Argentina, I mean, for you?
Well, for one thing, it was very exciting because it was something that I had always hoped to be able to experience at some point. And it was really stepping into, it was like a surprise package in some way, opening this door to a different culture and, again, a different language because their Spanish is, they call it Castellano. It's a little bit different from Spanish in some ways. And so all that was a part of it. And I really knew very little, the longer about the culture and about South America, and specifically Argentina, the longer I was there, the more I realized how very little I knew. And the more Sharmada realized how very little I knew. And so one of my memories is driving from class to class and her apartment and different places we would go, always madly driving around in taxi cabs because no one had cars, really. So we were always in taxi cabs. And we would have these crammed sessions about the politics and the history of Argentina so that I could understand more some of the experiences that people were having in the classes. So part of that was the terrible history that Argentina has with the disappeared people who... you know, just contains all that history of the military coup and the military control in South America and or in Argentina specifically. And Sharmada had a very personal experience of that because she had left the country when she was, I think, about 20 years old for her own safety because she was involved in politics going against the current government. And she eventually had to leave and she went to California, which is where she was that I met her. So she taught me from her personal history. And it was really a gift to have someone like her with the passion she had for her country and the personal experience of those very charged political days, because a lot of people who came to the Reiki classes came filled with that energy, with the grief of the history of their country and having many of them lost family members and things like that.
Oh, wow.
And so I walked into it, like, just kind of, you know, this groovy person from the Kootenays in Canada without a clue, and got these taxi cab rides that were just filled with me learning about this and then being able to open my heart up more with compassion to the history of the culture there. It was intense for me and also wonderful to have that opportunity.
Uh-huh. So do you feel that in your classes when people took Reiki that it was a way for them to open up and start healing the grief and the wounds that had occurred during these times and actually probably situations that might have been difficult even after having Reiki?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a great way to explain it. And the classes were large, so I would say there wasn't a lot of time for me to have personal contact with each of them, uh-huh, to support them through right. their processes, but that was part of the teaching for me to realize that Reiki would give them what they needed. And so there was a lot of emotion that was expressed during treatments as people uh-huh. were receiving treatment and also giving treatment. And with classes of 30 and 40 people, you know, I didn't have time to get involved with that, which is probably fine because I just learned more and more to trust Reiki to give them what they needed. And also to, as that community grew, that they would support each other in that
Beautiful.
Process.
Yeah, that's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Hmm.
Then after that, I was invited to go to Brazil to teach.
Uh-huh.
And Sharman had coached me a little bit that the culture would be quite different in Brazil than it was in Argentina. And again, this was educational for me because not knowing much about South America, I kind of lumped all the countries together
right.
as being the same, which I think a lot of North Americans do
totally.
Until they get to be there and have yeah. an experience of it.
Yeah, that was true for yeah. me mm-hmm. in some way. Like I had actually forgotten that Brazil has a different language, for instance, mm-hmm. that their language is based on Portuguese rather than Spanish.
So that was part of Charmita's teaching me about this, was that she says, okay, now you're leaving tomorrow for Brazil. You think you're pretty good in Spanish now, but you're going to enter into Portuguese, and you've never heard this. So she turned on the evening news, which was being
Broadcast
from Sao Paulo into Buenos Aires, where we were.
Oh, yeah.
And I listened to this language that was like extraplanetary because it did not sound at all like Spanish to me. And uh-huh. I thought, oh, boy, don't get cocky now over knowing Spanish because this is a whole different situation.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So that was part of it. And she also told me a bit about how the culture was different. And that turned out to her, that her summary, I feel, was quite accurate.
Uh-huh. Did you go to Sao Paulo first, or?
No, I flew into Rio, uh-huh. Rio de Janeiro, and met up with another Reiki master there and got to see a bit of Rio. And then we flew to the state of Espírito Santo, the Holy Spirit. And
wow.
Yeah. And went to a town called Vitória, which is uh-huh. an island set into the coast of Brazil. And we drove up this mountain to a place called Pedra Azul, which means the blue rock. And I was suddenly in a fairyland of flowers that I'd never seen before,
oh, wow.
and coffee plantations, and waterfalls, and birds, and sunshine. That was just amazing, and I just was totally filled with gratitude, and just felt so happy that Reiki had brought me to this place, that I could experience something like this that I never could have imagined how beautiful it was.
Mm. Mm. Wow, that sounds gorgeous. And so what was it like meeting the people there for the first time?
Well, I very quickly fell in love with the Brazilians. As much as I loved the Argentines, I found that the Brazilians were much more lighthearted.
Mm-hmm.
And this puzzled me a little bit in some ways because I asked about it to one of the people that I met there, and I said, wow, the people here seem so much more lighthearted and easygoing than what I was used to in Argentina. And it must be the difference in the political history. And he explained to me that it was that they also had the history of the military being in control. How this person described it to me was that he said, we as Brazilians have short memories. And I realized what he meant is that they, as he explained to me, they also have that military history that was very painful for them, but they let go of it as much as they could. They live in the moment more. Their commitment was to enjoy life. And I think it's partly often true in a more tropical area.
That's true.
And so it's a lifestyle of tropical cultures around the planet. In my little bit of experience, I feel like that is part of what seems to be a common thread.
That's true. I never thought about that. Interesting.
So what I found in the classes was the students were very intent on being present for this. They were totally there during the classes and soaking up everything that I had to share with them and all of the personal experiences of all the people in the class. But when the class was over, it was time to have fun. And I love that they had so much music in their lives and they loved to dance. I just couldn't believe the amount of dancing and celebration that went on.
Uh-huh.
And I remember in one class that I casually mentioned that I had just remembered that this was the weekend of my, I believe it was my 20th anniversary of having met Hawaii Takata. And I don't know how they did it, but by the time we had a break an hour later, they had a cake and balloons and music ready to play to celebrate this anniversary for me. You know, it was fantastic. I just loved how any reason for a party, they were right there. And as I said, they were also very serious students as far as embracing, really taking this into their heart.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like getting to know them had its own gift for me. As being in Argentina and getting to know those people gifted me deeply. This was part of the gift that I got from experiencing the Brazilians was their great love for life and their enthusiasm for life. I feel like I didn't get my full dose of that as a young child growing up in suburban middle-class America. You know, it was
for sure not. Not in this way anyway.
Yeah. So they helped me to set something free in myself that I think
wonderful.
Was always there, but hadn't had expression.
Uh-huh.
And I
wonderful.
Continue to be grateful to uh-huh. those students to
yeah.
this day.
Wonderful. Well, you know, I had this impression, so maybe this is mistaken, but I had this impression that because part of the Brazilian population actually came off of slave ships, because they would like kind of overshoot the Caribbean or they would come into South America through the Brazilian coast. And a lot of the black population there is descendants of these slave ships that went astray, or maybe they didn't go astray. Maybe they were supposed to land in South America. That part I don't know. I'm ignorant of. But I'm wondering, was there a lot of, or were there echoes of sort of African voodooism or witchcraft or something in your classes in Brazil?
The term, as I heard that referred to most generally, was called spiritualism.
Uh-huh. Well, that's really different connotation.
Yeah. And it took me a while to, like, people would come and ask me if I was a spiritualist. And I'm sure I just got a blank look on my face because I didn't know what they meant.
Right.
You know?
I was
very lucky down there to have good interpreters that helped me. And they were interpreting not just my speaking, but also the culture and some
great.
Of the questions that people would ask
Perfect.
Me. And so then I began to learn that the spiritualist, this term spiritualism that they used, was a bit of a broader topic, but included things like that. And there were certainly times where walking on the beach, I would come across rocks along the coast that had lots of candles and
All right.
pictures of things, of saints and parts of chickens and things that were used in all kinds of ceremonies that they did. I was able to at one point have somebody take me to a spiritualist church. That was really interesting to see some of what they did there. And so I can't speak about it too much because I just barely began to learn about it.
Right.
But there is definitely that history from the African culture that would come up in the classes at times.
Uh-huh.
Generally, I feel like people were held such respect for what they came to learn that they didn't bring that their history of those other practices into the classes.
So, I see.
Yeah, uh-huh. So I just felt like they were present for what they came to learn, and they didn't try to bring previous beliefs that they might have been exposed to or that they knew existed somewhere in
right.
their culture. They didn't try to bring that into the Reiki class.
Oh, wow.
Which I appreciated.
Right, that's wonderful.
But it also meant that I, you know, had to, on my time off from classes, for me to learn more about that culture, I had to kind of dig for it more and ask questions of people.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And some people knew a bit about it, and others were quite far removed from it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, well, interesting. Mm-hmm. And so you taught in Victoria?
Vitoria.
Mm-hmm. That was your main place of teaching there?
That was the main place. I also taught at some places near Rio de Janeiro, and a little bit in Sao Paulo, but going to Sao Paulo more was to work with the master community and to support them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, instead of first degree classes.
Yeah, yeah. Great. So when you went back to Canada and then had a class in Canada, how was that? That must have been really different.
Well, the first thing was kind of a realization that I now had twice the amount of time to teach because...
Right.
Because someone wasn't interpreting everything
right.
that I said.
Right.
And so that was just kind of a relief. And partly because as an individual, I really appreciate being able to have a personal relationship with the students.
Uh-huh.
And I found that because my language skills were so limited in South America,
mm-hmm.
I could have a different kind of connection with the students. And certainly we know we can say a lot with our eyes and just with our open hearts. We can feel energetically a connection with people, but I missed that ability to just have a little conversation over a cup of tea and things
right.
like that. You know,
right.
But, in both countries I got to where I could use, you know, very basic skills to have a little bit of interpersonal communication, but it really felt like when I got back to English-speaking countries, I could relax a lot more into just being able to connect with people a little more simply.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. One thing I do appreciate about working with an interpreter is the need to choose words carefully and
right.
thoughtfully and to take time for that.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
But I admit, I love both. But it was always a bit of a relief. It seemed a bit more simple when I got back to my own culture and my own language.
Were your classes longer than when you had interpretation? Like, did you teach longer periods?
No. I stuck to the same form of a Suishiki Ryoho and found that it actually worked fine because I didn't get distracted with long stories or things like that as much. You know, I just was able to be more succinct, which was actually a good practice for me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I would just want to tell my listeners is that, when I was kind of on my search and wanting to find myself as a brand new Reiki master, I did this kind of sojourn for one summer and found myself in the Kootenays, a bit east of where I first met the Canadian Reiki community, which was in the area of British Columbia called the Okanagan. So I was also following Wanya Twan around and actually giving her rides to different places. And I drove into Nelson, which is the largest town in this area of the Kootenays. And I thought, I just want to live here. And a few months later, I ended up living there. But, okay. So, and I lived there for a couple of years, I think, three years. And I owned a house there for about 7, which we weren't there because we moved down to Fresno, California. That's a long story. But anyway, When I was there, it was the first two or three years of being a Reiki master, and immediately, and my grandmother died just as I was moving there. So I felt that I had landed in this ideal place for Reiki in Canada, in the sense that it just felt like the people who came to the classes, and this was people of different cultures represented in the Kootenays, that they all had their connection in a very, I would say, earthy kind of way. You know, this area has the Dukhobor community, who are religious refugees, we might call them, from the Ukraine, and they are vegetarians, and they were herbalists, and they took to Reiki as being another expression of God's healing power, and it was amazing. And then there were all the, if we might use the word, back to the landers and hippies who just loved Reiki, because then they were relieved of this kind of wondering if they needed to ever to go to a doctor. And with Reiki, it was like, well, you just do Reiki. I mean, so there are great stories about treating tractor batteries and treating dogs and treating people in all stages of wellness and disease and birthing babies and all kinds of really wonderful stories. And this area just was so easy to teach Reiki in, because for me, I was really a skeptic. So there was no skepticism in the people that came to Reiki classes in Nelson when I was teaching. There was always, they were leading me in saying, oh, well, I could probably do this, or I could probably do that. And I can remember one of the students who was an avid gardener. She came back to me after the spring planting, and she said, you know, I don't know what to do, because I planted the same amount of seeds that I usually do, allowing for some not to germinate. And now I can't stand it, because they've mostly all germinated, and now I can't just throw them on the compost heap, because I get that they're living beings. So now I have to replant them. So she says, I've been replanting like little green bean starts and little lettuce starts and little this and that. She says, number one, my garden has gotten a third larger, but also I'm transplanting things that I never would have transplanted before, because I knew they would never live. And they were living. So she said, this is the good news and the bad news.
Both.
Both. And there are all kinds of stories like that. Yeah. So I just really was, and still am grateful to this day, that that's the environment that I was able to grow up into as a Reiki master. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that seems like a similar experience for you, in having the chance to actually be in the States shortly after, well, not shortly, but when you were initiated, and then going back there and having these different experiences.
I'd say my first 7 years after I learned first and second degree, my first 7 years or so were in Canada.
You know? Uh-huh.
And as you described the people there, I was certainly aligned with that. Definitely Reiki'd our seeds before we put them in the garden, and Reiki'd the dog and the cat, and, you know, sort of anything else that came along. And it was wonderful. It just fit totally into our lifestyle. It was very easy to embrace, as you described. Going into the States then, well, it was a little different, because we lived in a city and life was more cosmopolitan or something, you know. But I feel like that was my grounding. That was the beginning of my time with Reiki, and that has never left me, has always been a part of my teaching and my personal life with Reiki. And I feel somehow there must be a gift that has been given to my students
along
with my teaching.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, because now I've been teaching for 24 years, and the last few years I have not been traveling hardly at all. So I'm back in my little village again, living my lifestyle very much like it was 30 years ago when I first learned Reiki. And the students that are coming to me now are mostly about the same age that I was. and they're living the same lifestyle that I was living. And in fact, a woman called me recently and she said, oh, I'd really like to learn Reiki and I wonder if you ever do trades. Well, there's a history with trades that a lot of us have, that some of them didn't work out so well, and some of them worked out great. And so I just said to her, well, I'm open to it. What do you have in mind? And she said, well, I do gardening and roofing and things like that. And I said, well, my roof is fine, but I can always use help in my garden. And she said, well, are you sure this would be okay? Is this sort of fit in with how you do this? And I said, well, I'll tell you my story was that I got my first degree by getting firewood for Wanyi Tuan. My husband and I got her part of her winter's firewood in exchange for our class. And so it's fine with me. You know, as long as it is in balance and both people feel in balance with it, then yes, I'm very happy to do this. You know, so I feel like it's a very sweet time for me in bringing me back to my own roots with Reiki. Mm-hmm. And what I'm finding is very similar to what you explained, that there's very little skepticism. This is just a part of, it just fits into their lives so easily. So I'm finding that these people are very easy to teach because they just embrace it as a part of their lifestyle.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of them have read metaphysical books and, you know, are really out there in, as we would say, from the norm as far as, you know, believing in nature spirits and angels and so on. And I find that they leave that all at the door somehow, and they just come and they get that Reiki is this very simple process that they can somehow fold into their lives, and they do it, and it's just like matter of fact somehow.
I just taught a class last week, and in fact to this woman I was talking about,
all right,
that wanted to trade for energy that she would give me in exchange for Reiki, and someone in the class had just taken some kind of a massage course. I don't remember the name of it, but oriental based massage technique. And one of the last things I said after the 4-day class as they were getting ready to go was that I wanted to encourage them to sometimes just give just a Reiki treatment without massage techniques or talking to people about the chakras or, you know, whatever else they might combine, and talked about how one of the gifts of Reiki in my life has been the simplicity of it, and that I hope that if they ever represented Reiki to someone else who wanted to know what's Reiki, that they would give a Reiki treatment that didn't have other disciplines combined with it, just so that Reiki is represented for the simplicity of what it is. And it was interesting that as I said it and looked at a couple of these people, they just were already nodding their head, and I could see on their face and their eyes that they knew exactly what I was saying. And they accepted that. It was easy for them to accept that. And they also said it's the simplicity that we love so much.
Huh.
So
that's
I was really grateful that I wasn't kind of pushing them to do something that maybe they would be resistant to. They just said, yes, we totally understand. And,
right.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. That meant a lot to me. Yeah.
And what has been, after all your teaching, what has been, what are the gifts that you've received just in general and teaching?
A lot of it is what we talked about a little bit earlier about cultures.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's been an incredible gift to me to be able to travel around the world and meet people of different cultures, different languages. All that has been kind of icing on the cake in some ways.
Right.
But it's been a way for me to express something that is a part of myself. I don't even know that I could describe it, but it just feels like Reiki has been an amazing vehicle in some ways to express a part of who I am that I didn't even know I was missing before I learned Reiki. Kind of feels like I was always looking for some way to express love and some way to connect with people. And that's part of what Reiki has given me, the capacity to do that. And most of all, it's been about self-healing. And there was a time where I looked back over years of traveling and teaching Reiki where I thought, okay, I have perhaps touched the lives of a lot of people, but in some ways it felt like it was really all for me. It was all for my personal development, my personal growth, and things that are a part of the mystery of it that I can't say that I understand. But it just feels like if I've helped some other people along the way, that's great. But it's really been an incredible spiritual path for me and an opportunity for growth and healing that is, it sounds a bit cliche, but it really is beyond words for me. And then there's been the personal experiences where Reiki has been there for me so powerfully.
Right.
And that it's there at, you know, every moment. You're never without your Reiki. You're never without your hands, whatever situation you get into. So it just goes on and on as far as the way it's affected my life. And I've had Reiki now for more than half of my life, and it's a little it's a little hard to...
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to imagine my life would have been without it, because it has been such a huge part of the majority of my life.
Wow, that's amazing, huh?
Yeah. I figured it out, I think, just about to the day at one point, and then celebrated with my husband. Okay, I've had Reiki now for half my life. And and we learned on the same day, the same class.
But
he's a little bit younger than me, so he had to wait a little bit longer. To get to the halfway point.
That's great. Well, for those of you who have been listening to the show, Chelsea was on, I can't tell you when, but back in the annals of the radio show, describing her experience of using Reiki when her husband Ken had a hang gliding accident. And actually, you were in Brazil teaching at the time, and he was in Mexico?
No, he was in Caslo.
Was in Caslo.
Yeah.
Oh, for some reason. Now, this is really weird. For some reason, I thought he was in Mexico.
That was another accident.
Oh.
We have a long list, a long history of hospitals and chainsaws and power tools.
And hang gliders.
Yeah, I was actually in Pedro Azul, which I mentioned earlier today, when I got the news that he had been in an accident and was in a coma.
Yeah, so those of you who are interested in this part of the story, you'll have to go back into the archives, I don't know when, and find Chelsea Van Kennet again.
Yeah, so at least a couple of years ago, I'd say.
Yeah. So.
And the good news is Ken's doing great.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's the latest update?
Yeah, since that interview, he went back to work full time 14 years after the accident. I never thought I would see the day that he would be able to work full-time doing carpentry again.
That means he had done balance, remembering, remembering from the day before, like where he left off, what's happening, what he's supposed to do, and being able to, the balance was a really big thing.
Yeah.
Balancing with tools on his, strapped around him and on the ladders.
Exactly. So he has finally graciously accepted having a few quote rules about not going up on roofs and things like that, and he's realized that it's actually a really good idea, and he doesn't need to do all that. For a while he wanted to so he could prove himself somehow, but he realizes he doesn't have to do that now. So
no, that's He's great.
Yeah. It makes my everyday a lot easier.
I was going to say that when he went back to work full time, maybe now the emphasis was on giving you Reiki.
So I could get through each day.
Yeah.
That's true.
But that's great.
It's incredible. Amazing. Yeah.
But the doctors, I'm sure, would never have imagined this either.
I think you're correct. I mean, he was in a wheelchair for a while, and the story goes on. As Phyllis said, there's another interview to find out more about that. And I'm working on a manuscript that is going to tell the story in greater depth, which will be finished sometime in the next year or so. So that's another way to share it, because it was an incredible journey. And part of that was that there were people sending distant Reiki to him from all over the world before I even knew about the accident.
They wow.
were able to let other people know before they were able to find me in Brazil.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
We are ever so grateful for the support of the community.
Wow.
The international
Beautiful.
Community. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Were you ever able to go to any other countries in South America besides Argentina and Brazil?
I've been in a couple of airports.
But not teaching.
No.
And did you ever get to Mexico to teach? Because I knew that you and Ken spent lots and lots of time in Mexico and Central America.
Yeah, I have not taught in Mexico or Central America. I would love to at some point, and we'll see what the future holds.
Isn't it funny how Reiki takes us to these interesting places mm-hmm. and... yeah, and brings us to somehow it always feels congruent to what we need in our lives,
mm-hmm.
you know, our personal
Absolutely.
Lives. Yeah. That's been very true for me, I feel.
Yeah.
And do you feel like not just the culture, but the land helped, let's see, how can I express this? Oftentimes I feel when I was led by Reiki to go to different places. It was not just the culture, but it was also the actual earth in that place that somehow mm-hmm. I needed to stand on. And maybe, I don't know if healed is quite the right word, but using healing as a very general term, something that I needed to bring a certain quality into my mm-hmm. life or a certain kind of energy into my life. Have you ever felt that? Or
I have. I don't know that I can say a lot about it because it's hard for me to put it into words.
Right.
I know
right.
other people who could just talk about it very easily because they're really connected with the earth and they feel that they're very aware of the kind of things
uh-huh.
that we're talking
right.
about. For me, it happens in a more subtle way. But I definitely agree with you that that is a powerful force.
Uh-huh.
And there's a depth of my relationship with the countries in South America that goes beyond it's not just putting into words. I don't think I even totally realize the depth of it. I just know that I've always had very intense emotional experiences there. For example, Ken's injury happening while I was there.
Uh-huh.
And things like that. There's something very deep that
right.
is healing for me on a, I would say on a soul level, something deeper
right.
than I can easily talk about.
Right, right. I can imagine. And there was the death of this woman, Charmina, mm-hmm. in Argentina that was, I know, very upsetting, well, obviously for you,
yeah.
but also in the way that she died.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really amazing.
It was very tragic. And just 2 weeks after Ken and I were there visiting her.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, and there's other things too. Another friend of mine died while I was in Brazil. And, you know, I found out because somebody handed me a fax and, you know, things like that. It was so intense that people started saying, "Why do you keep going back?" And to me, I'm just all in favor of healing whatever it takes. And I just felt like as long as Reiki was calling me to go back there, you know, that I would keep going.
Wow, it's beautiful.
Yeah. So it has been incredibly healing for me. And I hope to go back and just be on vacation sometime. So
wow.
I can just have fun.
What a concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful, Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you would like to say to the listeners about teaching or Reiki or from your life experience with Reiki?
Yeah. Oh, there's so much to say, so much to talk about. I would say if I could speak in a very current way, like right up till today itself, as we sit here in Idaho in this circle of Reiki students, that it's been a bit emotional for me today because I'm finding my place in this circle, going from a time where I was traveling a lot. I was a very experienced master as far as teaching in different countries and teaching large classes and feeling a big part of Reiki communities around the world, including the Reiki Alliance, helping with the conferences and things like that. And my life has changed a lot the last few years. I mostly stay home. Our little village of Caslo has 1,000 people, and we're sort of tucked into the mountains, as you were describing earlier today. And mostly I grow my garden, and I have a small Reiki practice in Caslo. I treat people. I teach classes occasionally, but they're generally quite small. I have a very hard time leaving home right now. It just feels like I did my share of airports and traveling and all that. And this is a time for me to take care of myself and have a more quiet kind of a life. And I actually feel like in one way I'm living some of Takata's teachings in this way because I'm taking care of myself in a way that I didn't so much before. My attitude used to be, I will go wherever Reiki takes me. I will give whatever Reiki asks. And I'm seeing that a little differently now in that I'm just realizing that in some ways I got out of balance. I gave a bit too much as far as what my energy level could really handle. And now's the time for me to take care of myself in a more conscious way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm totally enjoying it. And
wonderful.
I just love that I get lots of time at home with Ken. And if he was here, he would be smiling and saying, yes, I do too. And I'm getting to cook a lot and feed myself well and get to build a community in my own town that is not about Reiki. It's just about a local community where I can support that community, do some volunteer work there, help that little microcosm of the planet to be a healthier place for people to live. And I don't know what the future holds, but I'm really grateful that at least for now, this is the way that I'm getting to express Reiki in my life.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. May we all be inspired. Well, listeners, this is another show. And we'll be back next week. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.